From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this hump day. That's right, it is Wednesday, September 14th, 2016. And as always, we are honored you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon yet again. On today's show, we will talk a bit of football. Yeah, both sports, okay? Football and football. Yeah. All right, we'll invite Brooks Lambeer to talk some soccer, folks. You get it now? Yeah, Brooks Lambeer, Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers, and of course, MSU men's and women's soccer writer for Soccer for Michigan. Brooks will be calling in to talk about and give us a preview of the Michigan State men's soccer matchup as they hit the road to take on Oakland University tonight, as well as give us a preview on Sunday's matchup at DeMartin Stadium as the Spartans and the Michigan Wolverines will get it on. We will also have more chatter centered around this Colin Kaepernick national anthem story, as a pretty well-known NFL analyst has really made some interesting comments concerning the whole Kaepernick protest, even calling out Cap as a backup quarterback in the NFL. We'll tell you who made those comments. Also, we will continue to get you ready for the Michigan State and Notre Dame game that takes place on Saturday night. MSU hitting the road for game two of its season. You don't want to miss that chatter. And on the back end of the show, folks, I sat back on my couch and watched a riveting special done by ESPN's Outside the Lines that centers around hazing in the world of high school sports. You do not, trust me, you do not want to miss that conversation. That and so much more. But hey, you know how we start this show. Let's start you off with our current sports quick hit headliners. All right, we start off today's headliners with a pretty interesting story here. Now, about 5 years ago, the house of former boxing great Joe Louis was abandoned by its last owners, leaving the house to slowly decay. Now, the house in Detroit's Boston Edison neighborhood had a particularly caved-in roof, peeling paint, and four dumpsters full of belongings from the previous owners. It is now on the market once again, restored by its buyer, Joshua Kushnerit. Now, Kushnerit has restored and sold 10 houses in the neighborhood and learned of the history of this particular house when an elderly neighborhood, elderly neighbor approached him. Now, the four-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bathroom house was listed Monday at $280,000 and has attracted wild interest in that short time frame. All right, moving on now, five-star corner. Darnay Holmes, out of California, announced he won't be making his previously scheduled visit to Ann Arbor this weekend for the Colorado game. Now, Holmes already attended a recruiting event at the Big House in August, but is going to wait to make his official visits in November when the games count more, according to his father. Now, Holmes is currently the second-ranked corner and 11th player overall for the 2017 class, according to 247 Sports. Ohio State and Nebraska are on the docket for Holmes as well, with his first official visit coming on November 5th when Ohio State will host Nebraska. All right, an update on former Michigan State point guard Keith Appling. Appling appeared in court briefly yesterday for a preliminary hearing that has now been pushed back to September 28th. The pushback comes after Appling's attorney requested more time to review the case information. Now, this case stems from a traffic stop, if you remember, on August 28th. Detroit police pulled Appling over near 7 Mile and Russell. Appling is accused of driving off while the police officer's hand was still on the window and then proceeding to throw a Gucci bag out the window containing a handgun. This is Appling's third case involving weapons since May. Western Michigan junior linebacker Robert Spillane is being reinstated for the team's Saturday matchup against the Big Ten zone, Illinois. Now, after being ejected late in the third on a targeting call during this past Saturday's 70-21 win over North Carolina Central for his second unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, would result in Spillane missing the first half of the next game. But after the review of the game tape by MAC commissioner, there was no targeting call to be made, and Spillane, who has totaled 113 tackles over the past 2 years, will suit up on Saturday. Row the boat, I guess, huh? All right, more food, more sports, more fun. That's going to be the motto of Morris Peterson's new sports bar and grill, scheduled to open in his hometown of Flint, Michigan. I actually had a pretty cool chat with Mo Pete yesterday and congratulated him on the opening of his new sports bar and grill. And we will actually have Mo Pete on the show next week. You don't want to miss that. But it took nearly 9 months of planning for this. And Mo Pete's Sports Retreat is projected to open in the spring and will be located in the Genesee Valley Center right between Bar Louie and Barnes & Noble. Now, the former MSU star says the sports bar will be an ode to great moments in local sports history, from the Flintstones and the Fab Five to the Detroit Red Wings and the Detroit Tigers, with the goal of creating more jobs for local residents. Peterson and his business partners are hoping this is one of just three locations that will open up in the area. All right, the Detroit Tigers offense continues to be streaky in the 8-1 loss last night, as they failed to really get anything going against the Minnesota Twins and Kyle Gibson, who has an ERA north of 5. Tiger starter and former Lansing Lugnuts star Matt Boyd struggled as well, allowing 3 hits in a row to start the game, giving Minnesota a quick 2-0 lead. The young arm continued to get roughed up by weak Twins offense, allowing 3 more runs in the third and 2 more in the fourth before being taken out. All around a disaster of a game, an all around disaster of a game for the Tigers, who now fall 2 games in back of the wild card hunt. Red hot Justin Upton remained out of the lineup last night after being taken out of Monday's game with a left calf strain. The Tigers play game 3 of the 4-game set against the Twins tonight at 7:10 p.m. when Sanchi takes the mound. That's right, Anibal Sanchez, folks. All right, in 2015, former San Jose Mercury News reporter Mike Rosenberg reported Washington State had the most college football players arrested in the past 5 years among FBS teams, with 31. Now, WSU head coach Mike Leach is speaking out. Leach claims that the Pullman Police Department has targeted his players. He doesn't understand how incidents involving multiple parties, only football players, are guilty. Leach said, quote, "It is irresponsible to this town, this community, and everybody to have some kind of double standard where we only focus on one demographic, one group of people, and then drag their name through the newspaper with a bunch of irresponsible comments," end quote. These comments come after sophomore linebacker Logan Tago was arrested back in June for suspicion of robbery and assault. Senior safety Shalom Luani was arrested in August for assault, and multiple players are being investigated for a fight that broke out at a house party in July. Interesting story there. And last but not least, following the banning of former UEFA president Michel Platini, UEFA had a two-man race to find the next president. Strong favorite, these names: Alexander Seferin. I probably butchered that as well, Isaac. There you go. You probably know these names better than me because you're a big soccer guy. Seferin of Slovenia defeated Michael van Praag of the Netherlands 42-13 to become the new leader of the European football governing body. Whatever happened to John and Smith, Isaac? My goodness. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, I do believe it's about that time to get this show started.
Thank you, Coach. Thank you. Wow, what an honor this is for me to be out here in front of you guys at a time like this. It was 30 years ago, I strolled onto this campus as a 17-year-old with big dreams and a fake ID. And not really completely fully understanding the experience that was about to unfold in front of me. I chose this school over many other schools because when I first strolled onto this campus, I felt it. I felt something about this place that was so special. I felt it. And then when I first got here, I wanted to know what was it so special that hit me in my heart and my gut. I went to class and I began to understand what it was like in class, what was so special about this place, the academics, and what a place this was on that front. And then I stepped foot in the big house and it really hit home right then and there about what this place is all about. And people look around in the Big Ten community and they look around and they look at us and they call that arrogance. They call it arrogance. And I say, you bet. You bet it's arrogance because you know what we have is special. You may be victors, but we are victors valiant. That's the difference. That's the difference. That's the Michigan way. That's what I carry with me. And that's what you have in your abilities tomorrow, every down, every snap. Because you know here at Michigan, excellence is not a final result. It is the building block to keep moving forward and go and crush it for people like me. I'm honored to be here in front of you to give you this message. And the best part about all of it is when I walked in that building in 1986 and Bo was on the sideline, there was one particular individual amongst the team, and we are a team, but there was one guy I want to single out because he was the one who was attacking everything with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind and who knew at the time this small, very infinitesimal group of people who's got it better than us.
Nobody.
That's correct, nobody. It was our coach. We are together at a time when this school is coming together for all of us. All of us, building something new, but also bridging back to the old days. I love you guys. And I speak for everybody who roots for the maize and blue. We love you. So go crush it tomorrow, and I'm honored to be your honorary captain against Central Florida. Thank you.
Wow. Good job, man.
Great job.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. You are locked into WKAR's Current Sports, the only place where you can hear Rich Eisen giving a, I guess you can say a pep talk speech to the U of M football team, coupled with, of course, the soothing tune of Tupac. The only place you're going to find that, all right, folks, in local sports talk radio. Welcome to the show. Again, our phone lines are open. They will stay open all the way up until 2 p.m., 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And, you know, really briefly, I want to call on my engineer, Isaac Constance, because you are a big hip-hop head. But I was really shocked, Isaac, yesterday that you didn't play Tupac the entire show because yesterday, to the day, it was it marked 20 years since, of course, Pac was killed out in Las Vegas.
And I meant to.
Crazy,
I really
right?
did. I got there early. I played whatever songs, and it just didn't strike my mind at the time. But you're right. Rest in peace, Pac, who you and I had this discussion. He's obviously top three.
He's the greatest rapper of all time right now. Right now.
He's up there.
Tupac
he's
is.
Top three.
In my
he's
opinion,
number
he's
two for me.
He's number two for you. You put Jay-Z above Pac, but I got to put Pac number one. But yeah, I was shocked that you didn't play that. I mean, I can't believe it's been 20 years, though. And I remember I was like 6 years old when that moment happened. I remember driving. I still remember this vividly. I was in the car with my pops, and he was driving around. He was dropping me off to my grandmother's house before he went to work. And it was on the radio, and everybody was just talking about, you know, Pac passing away. So 20 years, though. Crazy stuff. But what you just heard, again, Rich Eisen, who I had no idea was a U of M grad until I saw that speech that he gave to the U of M football team. That occurred last week on Friday, a day before the University of Michigan football team took on the University of Central Florida at the Big House. Of course, throughout this entire U of M football year, they have been bringing in, you know, a lot of celebrities that have ties to the U of M program and the U of M school, period, to act as honorary captains. So Rich Eisen, a guy who I've been admiring in the world of sports broadcasting since, you know, since I was a little tyke. You know, he was on ESPN Sports Center. I remember Rich doing the show along with my journalistic idol, Stuart Scott, and they were absolutely fantastic. And now Rich Eisen, of course, with the NFL Network, he has his own radio show. He's big time in the world of sports broadcasting. So I really thought he did a good job, though. When I watched the entire 5-minute speech that he gave to Jim Harbaugh's troops, and I thought he absolutely knocked it out the park. And, you know, I picked out just we couldn't play the whole speech, I mean, that would have took up too much time in the show, but we played a nice chunk of it just then. And I absolutely loved how he said, yo, we're not just victors, we're victors valiant. that was pretty cool. I'm pretty sure he thought about this. And again, he was kind of, it looked like he went off the cuff because he didn't have any paper in his hands. I mean, he just kind of just addressed the team. And it looked like he just kind of freestyled it. But I'm sure he spent hours the night before probably rehearsing that and making sure that he hit on every area that he wanted to. So I thought, hey, Rich, you did a good job, my man. And, hey, I don't know if you had a big hand in that Michigan win over UCF, excuse me. But, hey, at the same time, it must have worked because Michigan won. Folks, we have an interesting show today because on the back end of the show, I'm going to play you guys a snippet from ESPN's Outside the Line show. I've been a huge fan of Bob Lee and the incredible cast of reporters who are able to go out there and just do good journalism. You know, they go beyond, talk about going beyond the X's and O's. They certainly go beyond the X's and O's and bring to you stories from within the sports realm that are just off, just not your normal sports story. And last night, they had an hour-long special centered around hazing in high school sports, an epidemic that I had no idea was one until sitting down and watching three just sickening examples of hazing, not even just in high school sports. There were two examples that they highlighted throughout the show from the high school realm. And then near the later end of the hour, they brought up an example from college. And I had no idea how prevalent this sick ritual of hazing is at the high school realm. So later on in the hour, I'm going to play to you guys a snippet from that special. We're going to have a discussion on it because I think that it is very important. It needs to be addressed. And what OTL found was more than 40 incidents across the nation that have been reported. I mean, just imagine those that haven't been. They say that less than 5% of these hazing incidences, you know, get reported. But, you know, but they found 40 across the nation that have been reported and that really did not have any extensive investigation or follow-up done in which someone was held accountable for that happening to that respective individual. So you don't want to miss that. Kind of a heavy show today because we'll get to that on the later end of the hour. But I also want to yet again bring up this Colin Kaepernick national anthem story that has been really dominating the sports talk airwaves for quite some time now. Colin Kaepernick, of course, is taking a knee as opposed to taking a stand, taking a knee and taking a stand in a way. Because, you know, when looking at this entire situation, there are just layers and layers of different ways in which you can go with this convo. And I find it for me. And again, I understand this is what makes this conversation beautiful. You may not agree with me, and I may not agree with you, but the fact that we are having the conversation about equality in our nation based on Colin Kaepernick deciding to take a knee and not participate in the national anthem, in my opinion, it's healthy. Because we wouldn't be having this conversation if he wasn't doing this. I find it very interesting. Again, there are multiple opinions out there, and hey, you may not agree with me, I may not agree with you, but again, we're having the conversation. But I think that ESPN's Trent Dilfer went a bit too far. He actually attacked Kaepernick on ESPN's Sunday pregame show over the 49ers backup QB's ongoing protest against social injustice and police brutality, one that sees him kneel for the anthem before games. And Dilfer's blast was even more pointed, as the former quarterback said that Kaepernick, quote, is a backup QB whose job is to be quiet and sit in the shadows. He also went on to claim that the controversy has, quote, torn at the fabric of the team, end quote. Now, that's the later is an interesting comment, because several 49ers players have actually said that it's had quite the opposite impact on the team that, you know, than what Dilfer is alluding to. Safety Eric Reed knelt with Kaepernick on Monday night. Teammates Antoine Bethea and Eli Harold raised a fist. Heck, Rams players, Kenny Britt and Robert Quinn, also raised their fist. And several 49ers players have said that Kaepernick's stance has actually helped with team unity. Well, upon hearing Dilfer's comments and upon hearing Dilfer's rant, Cap decided to clap back. Here's what he had to say.
I think that's one of the most ridiculous comments I've heard. The fact that you say, no. You're a backup quarterback, stay in your place. That's an issue. I mean, to me, you're telling me that my position as a backup quarterback and being quiet is more important than people's lives. No, I would ask him to really have a conversation with the families of people that have been murdered and see if he still feels that way. Because I bet you he doesn't, just because he hasn't experienced that type of oppression.
What do you think?
No, that's something that I hope he goes home and really thinks about what he said. And how it impacts not just me, but how it impacts people whose lives are affected by these issues.
Totally agree with Colin Kaepernick. And I think it was real petty for Trent Dilfer to call out Cap as a backup quarterback who should just shut up and just fade into the shadows. Absolutely. That logic absolutely makes zero sense to me. But this is my opinion. Again, you don't have to agree with it. I've said countless times that I totally applaud Colin Kaepernick for what he is doing, for the conversation that he has opened up, and a conversation that, you know, because far too often, and, you know, I remember when we talked about the deaths of Philando Castile, the deaths of Alton Sterling, and of course, the situation that occurred out in Dallas with the killing of police officers. I remember us talking about this on the show, and you know, it opened up a big convo about race relations here in the United States of America. And during that conversation, you know, we had callers. I got a few emails, and people were happy that we were having the conversation of how to make race relations, when it comes to our law enforcement, our local law enforcement, how do we make those ties better? It opened up that. But as it comes with many social issues that we have here in America, when it happens, we're all gung-ho. And we want to have these conversations, and we want to find out, you know, what can we do? But what happens in a week or two? It becomes an afterthought. It really does, folks, and everybody goes silent. And I think it's so important when you have an individual like Colin Kaepernick, who at first, and I when we brought up this conversation, I talked about my mixed emotions when I first heard about Colin Kaepernick not deciding to stand up during the national anthem. I had mixed emotions because, you know, the national anthem is historically heralded as a symbolic representation of our freedom, the freedoms that we experience here in the United States of America. And for someone to, quote unquote, disrespect that and not participate, I was a bit moved by that, and I didn't know if I agreed with Colin Kaepernick. And then, upon looking at Colin Kaepernick donning the socks that depicted policemen as pigs, and then Colin Kaepernick donning the T-shirt with Fidel Castro right on the front of it, I didn't know where he was going until he finally decided to open up and give a reason as to why he is not participating in the national anthem. Now, I've listened to many, many sports talk shows in the last few days. I've read many forums. I've gotten a few tweets. I've talked to a lot of my friends who are black, white, Latino about this discussion. And I get it. I tell you this. I respect everybody's opinion on this. Because, again, everybody's not going to agree with this. Everybody is not going to agree with what Colin Kaepernick is doing. But the only thing that I ask is that you at least try to sympathize with it, which is hard to do, which is hard to do. Look, folks, I am an African-American male that lives here in America. When I saw what occurred with Philando Castile and Alton Sterling and Michael Brown and Trayvon Martin, I mean, I could go on and on and on here. When I saw what occurred with those individuals and more, my emotion and how I react to it is going to be entirely different from how a white male reacts to it, how a Caucasian female reacts to it, because they don't have the emotional tie to a circumstance or situation like that, like I do. And I get that. I don't expect you to sit up there and shed tears when you see Alton Sterling, a 37-year-old black man who was shot several times at close range by being held by two Baton Rouge police officers on the ground, unarmed at that. I don't expect you to shed tears when that happens, because there is a different emotional connection that I share to that story than you do. But at the same time, it is foolish not to address the problem that we do have here in America with law enforcement and that perception with African-American males walking the street on a daily basis. It is foolish not to address it, folks. Totally foolish. Do I expect you to get it if you haven't walked in those shoes? No. But I think, using common sense, that you would get that when it comes to equality, it depends on the person, folks. It certainly does. I want to get your thoughts on this story. I'm not here behind the mic saying, because, folks, again, this is that we see with Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, so on and so forth. That is a very small percentage of our law enforcement that are out there doing these heinous crimes. Okay? The majority of law enforcement out there is doing their jobs, serving and protecting. But a few rotten apples certainly spoil the bunch in this conversation, folks. And we need to have conversations like this because it aids in progression. Is it going to happen overnight? No, not at all. But what Cap is doing is reminding you that we cannot forget. Agree with me or disagree with me? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Shifting gears really briefly here, we have on line one, we have Apache on line one that wants to talk about Mo Pete's new restaurant out in Flint Town. Apache, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing okay, man. That was an incredible, impartial representation of what's going on, man. I appreciate that. Personally, when I get paid, I'm going out and get his jersey. I support him. I think it's a major sacrifice, and he may down the line pay a severe price. But in the long run, he may be upheld as a courageous person, just like Muhammad Ali. Maybe not to that extent, but I think what he's done is give every individual person of color a tool for protest, legal, nonviolent protest. Because we are in pain, and we suffer in secret quietly a lot. And we have to endure this nonsense, so I respect what he's doing. I think the protests, fundamentally is about a rogue component of police officers throughout our country who have taken upon themselves to commit murder and not be held accountable by our criminal justice system, as you and I would be, or other people. And I think fundamentally that's what's wrong. It's not good cop, bad cop. There's a system there where it's saying it's all right to kill somebody illegally if you're a police officer. And I think that's a fundamental problem. Mm-hmm. But that's not why I called, though. You said, well, what's the name of Mo Pete's restaurant?
Yes, Mo Pete's new restaurant here, as I bring it up here, Mo Pete's Sports Retreat. Mo food, more sport, Mo sports, Mo fun. I absolutely love that, that
okay,
tagline.
Well, here's my question.
Yeah.
Is it going to cost Mo money?
That's a really good question, and you know I plan on asking that to Mo when he comes on the show next week.
Cause, you know, you got Donald Trump branding, now you got Mo Pete branding. Man, is the food better? It'll cost Mo money.
That's a good point. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, knowing Mo and knowing again, because Mo always is giving back to his community.
He's a good guy.
He's a great guy. I'm pretty sure the prices will be reasonable. Yeah. For anyone.
And he was a major surprise in the NBA, man. That was a bad boy.
He was.
Oh, he could shoot his tail off. Here's my question. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. I'm watching football, college level, and I'm watching the quarterback break away from the pocket and then go into the secondary, and everybody's collapsed on him to tackle him. So he fakes going down, and the tackler lifts up, and then he takes off again. Here's my question. Is that illegal?
That should – I didn't see that. Did you see that, Isaac?
I did not see that. That should be illegal.
I mean, to fake someone out because – When you start your slide, the rule is you got to ease up. You can't hit the quarterback
right.
when you start that
right.
slide. But if I think the refs did the refs point out that you know what was the ruling? Did they allow the quarterback
no,
to get back up?
There was no call. He got an extra 5 or 10 yards as a result of his mannerism faking like going to the ground, and then he continued running and so forth. He definitely was faking like he was going to slide, and I wondered if that was a penalty because that would be very unfair and very dangerous for both sides. You know.
I've never seen it. I don't even know how you would even do that. I'm trying to picture that in my brain.
You bend your knees, you let up, and then you explode.
Well, and I think what they would do is let the referees know before the game or before the play itself that we might try this. Because sometimes when you do a very non-conventional and very unexpected onside kick, it's a similar procedure. Like, hey, I want you guys to watch this we're forewarning you that we're going to try something tricky.
Well, the thing with me is, that's unfair to the defense. I mean, if the rule is, if you slide, that's it, and you have somebody duping you on that, you can't do that. That's not fair.
At the same time.
I get where you're coming from, Isaac, but at the same time, it's not fair to the defense out there.
I just wondered if that was in the books, if you guys knew that was in the books.
I'm going to have to look at that play, Apache. I'm pretty sure I can. Do you know what game that was? What game was that from?
I'm trying to think. It may have been a Big Ten team in there. It may come to me in a few days.
Okay.
You know, I have to wait a couple weeks for things to come back to me.
All good. Well, I'll try to do some research and see if I can bring up that play, all right?
All right, man. Hey, thanks a lot, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, Apache. Always a great call. All right. And again, folks, if you want to call in and be a part of today's Current Sports, just like my man Apache just did, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. When we come back, we will chat with Brooks Lambeer, Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers and MSU men's and women's soccer writer for Soccer for Michigan. Don't go anywhere. That chat and so much more when we come back. Welcome back, ladies and gents, boys and girls. You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. We will now invite our guest for today's show. His name is Brooks Lambeer. He is certainly a dear friend of our airwaves. Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers and now contributor for the U.S. Open Cup. And I want to correct myself. He is now a former writer for soccer for Michigan, Mr. Brooks Lambeer. Welcome to the show. Brooks, how you doing?
Good, Al. How about you?
Always fantastic to chat with you, my man. Now I want to dive into some MSU men's soccer. Now, MSU, 3-1 this year after winning its last two games at home. Last week, the Spartans went 2-0 with wins against Columbia and Rutgers in the Big Ten opener, of course. Now, following the game against Oakland tonight at 7 p.m., the Spartans will return home to take on in-state rival Michigan on Sunday in the battle for the Big Bear Trophy. The game will be televised on the Big Ten Network. Brooks, the MSU soccer team having won its last two games at home, 3-1 on the season, how good can this team be this year?
I mean, I think it really depends on how the midfield plays. They have a very good defense as far as their right and left back with Dewey Lewis and Connor Corrigan, who get the field very well. Jimmy Fisk is very solid there at the right center back position. I question them at the left center back position. Michael Wentugo is a very good player, but as a freshman, he's going to make some mistakes. So you're going to have to deal with that. Jimmy Hague's a very good goalkeeper for him. You know, he's good in the air. He can catch the ball. He's tall. He can shot stop. He can parry the ball away. So I think defensively they'll be fine. And I think the biggest addition, honestly, this year to the Michigan State has been Giuseppe Baroni in the midfield, along with Ken Krilicki playing next to each other. Because, you know, they've really helped this team get forward a little more offensively where they lacked. So, you know, with Ryan Sierakowski up there, and then obviously, you know, DeJuan Jones is back and healthy after breaking his foot last spring. So, you know, this team can go as far as, you know, they allow themselves to go, to be a little cliche about it. Do I think they're going to win the Big Ten, the Big Ten tournament? No. But I think they can compete for a top three finish.
Now, Brooks, the team, this is a team that went 8-9-2 overall last year, 2-4-2 in conference last season. So it sounds like from your answer just then, it's not real realistic to expect a huge improvement or a huge leap of success when evaluating this year. Am I right?
No, I mean, I think they've taken a giant step from where they were last year.
In what way?
I think, you know, well, they adjusted to the new system. They had, you know, prior when, you know, Jay Chapman, Sapaya Lache, Tim Freud, Thad Montague, and all those guys were there, you know, they were playing a 4-4-2, and, you know, they needed to adjust to the 4-3-3 and get the right players they needed. And, you know, I mean, they had some players left over from the past couple seasons when they made the Elite Eight, you know, back-to-back. But, you know, it was just an adjustment and figuring out where to play players. Like, for instance, you know, Dewey Lewis is playing the right midfield position. Mm-hmm. You know, he's better suited at right-back form. Then they have Andrew Herr playing, you know, in the right midfield, right forward position. And Andrew Herr is a very versatile player. He brings a lot to the table. So I just think with the shuffling around the players, I think they've finally found players that fit in the positions they need. And they have a better, not to say Ken Krilicki is not a great number 10, but I think Giuseppe is an interesting 10 because he's a very good technical player. He may not be the fastest guy. I'm not saying Ken Krilicki isn't a technical player, but he brings a little more to slowing down the game and switching the ball and in transition, where Ken Krilicki is going to give you very much that offensive style where he's going to go at players. You know, he'll look for people occasionally. But, you know, it's just the pieces seem to fit better this year in the 4-3 season than they did last year.
Brooks, this is a team that went 3-2 before opening up the conference year with a 4-0 win versus Rutgers on the 9th. They went on to beat Syracuse to start. That game actually went into overtime. They lost to Butler. They won at SMU, lost to Oral Roberts, and then, of course, they topped Columbia. What did we learn during that stretch of play before the Big Ten season began? What did we learn about this team during that stretch?
I think we learned a lot. We learned, you know, an SMU team that was ranked, I believe, number 14 in the country. Now, I've heard some things where they were a little overrated this year, but, you know, a win's a win at SMU. It's a very good program. On the road, it's huge in college soccer. It's good for your RPI. You know, Rutgers has struggled. They haven't won yet. I mean, since they played Michigan State, you know, prior to that, they had not won a game. So I think Rutgers is in an adjustment year. But, you know, a 4-0 win against a Rutgers team with a good player in Jason Wright for Rutgers, who's a very good offensive player, mm-hmm. you know, says a lot when you keep a clean sheet. And, you know, it's a good start to the Big Ten season, which is what this Michigan State team, you know, needs. You know, not to say they never play well in they don't usually play well in conference play, because they always do. But it's 4-0. You know, that shows me that the offense is cooking. They understand things. And, you know, because they really lacked goal scoring last year. They really struggled to find the back of the net at times.
Now, I want to bring up a local star who has been on our airwaves multiple times, Brooks, and that's DeJuan Jones. Of course, he was Michigan's Mr. Soccer when he played at East Lansing High School in his senior year. DeJuan, actually, I didn't even notice before until we brought him on earlier this month, but DeJuan scored his first goal at DeMartin Stadium against Columbia earlier this season. How has DeJuan improved from his freshman campaign to now here as a sophomore?
It's a learning curve, you know. Figuring out what you can and can't do, you know, there's ebbs and flows to the game of soccer, whether it's college, youth, or professional. You know, figuring out those ebbs and flows and understanding what to do in certain situations. And I think he's become a better situational player. We always knew he could take people on 1v1 because of his speed, and his feet are quick. They're very, very quick. You know, he hit the weight room. You know, it's funny. I saw him at the Elite ID camp this summer, and you know, I told him, you know, man, you look bigger, man. You look like you put some muscle on. He's like, dude, I've been lifting, you know, since I broke my foot. And, you know, I was like, geez, like, are you sure about that? And, you know, he's filled out. He's filled out, and, you know, he's just become a smarter player. And, you know, that's what this staff does. Damon, Kale, you know, Brett Mullen and Ben Pierman, they all, you know, they make their guys smarter players, and they make them better technically. This is a really good program they have here at Michigan State. And, you know, I'm going to expect that, you know, from year to year, the players are going to improve.
Yeah, no longer is DeJuan that string being that we used to watch him play at East Lansing High School. He has certainly put on some muscle, to say the least. All right, mm-hmm. Oakland University, that's where the Spartans travel to tonight at 7 p.m. Oakland is a team that is 1-3 overall. What kind of game can we expect tonight?
It's going to be interesting because both these teams have played a 4-3-3. I expect Michigan State to possess the ball more. Whether, you know, if they're going to play around in the back with it and look to find people in the midfield, you know, they'll play the long ball to the back every once in a while because you have Sierakowski and DeJuan, you know, you could play through the channels. You know, I think Oakland's really going to have to score off counterattacks.
Mm-hmm.
Oakland, when I watched them play against Akron and UCSB, it's not like they struggled terribly, but they really don't have too much offense going forward, and they really can't play out of the back. Their two center backs they have are very good. They're very strong, but with their feet, they really lack the technical side of the game. So, you know, if they play a long ball out, the center backs will probably mostly clear it out of bounds or head it back towards where it came from. So, you know, I think if Michigan State can work the ball around, control the midfield, and, you know, find Sierakowski or, you know, DeJuan, you know, through the channels, or if Ryan drops in to receive the ball, you know, I think they can, you know, take it to this Oakland University team. But it'll be a good game. Oakland is a very good squad. Austin Ricci is a very good player. Alex Swarka is a very good player for him as well. It's going to be a tough matchup. Oakland always plays Michigan State tough.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Brooks Lambeer, Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers and contributor for the U.S. Open Cup. I want to go back to a name you just mentioned, Brooks, Austin Ricci. He leads Oakland right now in scoring with 1 goal, 2 assists, 4 points. How do they slow Austin down, and what makes him a special player? What stands out with Austin?
Austin just does a lot of stuff well for Oakland University. Whether he, you know, he's very versatile. He could play the number 10 position. He may play at the striker position on the left, right, or centrally in the 4-3-3. So, you know, he's got good footwork. He's got a good nose for the goal. He, you know, when they played against UCSB, when I saw him at the tournament in at Ohio State,
mm-hmm.
you know, he hit a great shot from probably 20 yards out on the ground. You know, he beat the keeper to the far side. So, you know, he's very dangerous on the offensive side and around the box. And, you know, he's willing to try to receive the ball and drop low into the midfield. But, you know, there are times when I saw teams, for example, this summer when he played for KW United, and I watched him play against the Michigan Bucks, where the Bucks did a very good job to cut him off. And I think he maybe touched the ball 10 times in that game. after his team lost. I think it was like 6-0. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Austin's a good player. You just have to make sure, be aware of where he is, and, you know, try not to let him drag your defenders away from your positioning and get you out of sync in the back.
All right, Brooks, before we get you out of here, of course, we have to talk about the rivalry between U of M and MSU. That game will take place on Sunday at DeMartin Stadium. Of course, right now, Michigan, looking at last year, Michigan actually topped MSU 1-0. And I believe they are in possession of the Big Bear Trophy. That's the winner of the MSU and Michigan men's soccer game. First off, I want to just focus on the trophy briefly here, Brooks. Mm-hmm. What's the history behind that trophy? Why is it the Big Bear Trophy?
I'm not sure why exactly it was the Big Bear, but I know that the coaches, this is when Joe Baum was coaching at Michigan State, and mm-hmm. I think it's been about 20 years, at least 20, I'd say, since the trophy's been around. And, you know, both head coaches for Michigan and then Joe Baum was talking about, hey, we want, like, a trophy to trade back and forth, and, you know, we want to add something to this rivalry, and, you know, hence the Big Bear Trophy came about, and, you know, I honestly like it better than the Paul Bunyan Trophy. The Big Bear, it's pretty right. awesome, to be honest. This is the Big Bear. And, you know, that's something that, you know, Damon and the, you know, the players and other coaches, you know, want, they want it back, and they want that in their locker room. And, you know, they're, you know, it's going to be a tough game on Sunday.
Yeah, and looking at the Big Bear Trophy, I think it may need another can of brown paint. It's a very cool trophy. I may side, though, on Paul Bunyan, just because the Paul Bunyan Trophy is just so out there, like Paul Bunyan. I mean, really? I mean, it's so crazy and out there and out in left field. But, you know, maybe that could be a Twitter poll for his next. I mean, what do you like better, the Big Bear Trophy or the Paul Bunyan Trophy? But, hey, Brooks, what can we expect this Sunday against a U of M team that is number one in the Big Ten right now and number 9 nationally?
Nationally, they're not ranked, just to let you know.
Oh, they're not.
That may be the women's soccer team.
I'll recheck that. Okay.
Yeah. But, what can we expect from Michigan? You know, a team that's going to play a 4-2-3-1, be very solid in the midfield and defensively. You know, Lars Eckenrode is a very good defender, like, kid out of the DC United Academy, and then Andre Morris is a very strong defender as well. Mm-hmm. Riley Woods, always dangerous from the left back position, puts in very good balls, takes their corners and free kicks, and, you know, he plays a very accurate ball in the box. And, you know, their superstar, Francis Atuane, who's, you know, a right to dream kid from Ghana. You know, he's very fast, very technical, could be a little better in the final third. You know, they're very strong with Marcelo Borges in the middle and Brett Nason. So it's going to be this is going to be a game where someone needs to control possession of the game. They could get back and forth at times, but, you know, you don't want to play too quickly, and you kind of want to – they're going to feel each other out for the first probably 5 or 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it'll be an interesting matchup because Michigan – the record doesn't speak to how good they actually are. But sometimes they just play inconsistently at times.
Okay. So who wins? I'm putting you on the spot right now, Brooks.
Who wins? Oh, boy. I like to stay neutral now just because I'm a scout. So okay.
Well, yeah, you're staying neutral. Yeah. Just from an unbiased point of view, who do you think talent-wise will pull out this game?
I mean, talent tells me Michigan.
Okay.
Just because – just a little better offensively going forward. But Damon and Ben and the whole staff, Kale, they all prepare very well. So would I be surprised if Michigan State won? No, because, I mean, these two teams know each other so well. So there's really nothing to hide between the two of them. So, you know, I'll say Michigan State wins this one. They want it back badly.
Okay, and I didn't totally whiff on that stat, Brooks. They're number one in the Big Ten, of course, and number 9 nationally in shots per contest. So I just didn't add that.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. We got it correct now. All right. Well, Brooks, for all of our listeners out there, how can they read your work, my friend?
I mean, right now the U.S. Open Cup's all done. So, you know, I usually write in the early stages for that. So, like, when, you know, DCFC or the Bucks are playing, you know, in the first rounds or so.
Right.
The U.S. Open Cup website. I write there, and then, you know, if you see me at games, right, I'll be in my Portland Timbers stuff, so you can always stop by and say hi.
And I don't know how you do it, man. How are you loving the travel schedule that you have as a scout for the Portland Timbers? Because, Brooks, I feel like every time I go on Facebook, you are hopping on the road yet again.
Yes. So last night I was in South Bend watching Notre Dame and UConn.
Right.
So I'll be in Michigan, Indiana tonight. And then I head to Louisville Friday, Dayton Sunday, and then Michigan State on Sunday. So it's kind of everywhere, to be honest with you.
Do you like the travel schedule?
You know, it can get kind of, the grind gets kind of weary on you at times just because, you know, I do work another job, you know, besides the writing and scouting stuff. So, you know, another job gives me a little extra money. So,
right.
You know, you're pretty much going sometimes like for instance, you know, I leave 7 to 9, you know, at Notre Dame yesterday and then, you know, drive back and I work at 8:30 in the morning today. So it wears on you, but you know, you love it. This is what I want to do, you know, something in soccer for the future. So, you know, I love it. So I can't complain.
Can't complain at all. And we can clearly see you love your job, Brooks. Well, you're doing a fantastic job, my man. You keep it up. All right. Brooks Lambeer, Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers and contributor for U.S. Open Cup. Brooks, thanks so much. You take care. All right.
Thank you, Al. You take care as well.
You got it. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will, I guess you can say, start the conversation when it comes to an interesting report done by ESPN's Outside the Lines that highlights hazing in sports. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have less than 10 minutes left here in the show. If you want to call in and get something quickly off of your chest, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. I want to bring up a report done by ESPN's Outside the Lines. According to ESPN, the program's investigative team led by reporter John Barr, they spent 8 months investigating a trio of hazing incidents. The first is the case of a former Oakland Hills football player by the name of Josh Villegas, who claims that he was forcibly sodomized while a freshman on a football team out in California. The Outside the Lines team also reports on the case of late Milton, Vermont team Jordan Prevey, who committed suicide following hazing suffered as a member of the Milton football team. And, you know, I sat back on my couch last night and I watched the entire hour-long special. It was just riveting reporting done by John Barr, Bob Lee, and the rest of the OTL team. And I just couldn't believe how prevalent this sports hazing culture truly was until I sat down and watched that special. Now, we will have an elongated conversation on that topic on tomorrow's show that you don't want to miss. But to introduce you all to that dialogue and that convo, I want to play just a snippet from the case of former Oak Hills football player John Villegas, who recounts the moment in which his life completely changed. Check this out.
Then came the afternoon of August 27th, 2013. Josh says he was using the urinal near the locker room when he was overpowered by two older teammates.
They just come up behind me and pin me down and then just slip off my pants. They're laughing about it. My head's down. I don't know what's happening. And they start taking off my pants. And that's when I start panicking.
Josh says one teammate pinned him against the wall, face first, while the other stuck fingers in his rectum.
down and they just stick in the finger. They're laughing while they're doing it. And then I just fall. They let me go and I just like kind of zone out, black, just fall into myself. Not knowing what to do. I don't know how long I stayed there, but I stayed there. I probably stayed there for a while, I know. And I kind of just got up, put my pants up, and just walked out to practice.
What is going through your mind at that point?
Pain.
Pain?
Pain.
It still hurts, doesn't
it? Yeah, man. It's not something you get over that easy.
Your mom said that you told her they took my manhood. That's what they did?
Yeah. I mean, you're not supposed to forcibly do that to somebody, you know what I mean?
Yeah, as you can see, that was a heavy, heavy special done by OTL last night. We will talk about hazing in the sporting world on tomorrow's show. And a quick stat to throw out. I briefly alluded to it earlier on in the show. Outside the Lines actually identified more than 40 similar hazing assaults since 2011 in towns and cities across the country, and that number is quickly growing. We'll have more on hazing and sports on tomorrow's show. Folks, I want to give a special thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to yet another edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. A big thanks to Brooks Lambeer for joining our airwaves today. As always, same time, same place tomorrow. Have one fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.